How many days more shopping for those last-minute gifts? Not quite last-minute yet. How many days until I have to get the Christmas cards in the mail for them to get there before December 25th? What is the latest I can ship my packages to get to loved ones that are in other places? Just how near or how far away are the deadlines for which we wait and prepare? Today, we in the church world enter the season that we call Advent. It's a season that is named for the Latin word which means coming or arrival, Advent, arrival or coming. So this, the first Sunday of Advent, also begins the formal church liturgical year, when the cycle of our holidays and observances and the cycle of readings that are shared across many traditions begins anew. So this is the beginning of the new year in church. So Happy New Year, church. You weren't ready for that, were you? Happy New Year. So I don't know about you, but this month can be especially hard for all kinds of reasons. There is a lot of anticipation, a lot of countdowns, and there's also a lot of waiting, and most of us are not very good at waiting. It's also a season of compulsory cheerfulness, which can make many of us even more poignantly lonely or depressed. And all too often, we're surrounded by a flurry of manic expectations, which can make many of us feel like disorganized failures because we just can't quite get with it. Yet 4 weeks before Christmas, Advent comes upon us as people of faith in the church and invites us to first pause, to wait, to prepare ourselves spiritually. Now, there are many ways, in fact, most ways, that I believe we can never be fully prepared for what we proclaim happens at Christmas. We can never be fully prepared for the arrival of God with us. Who can be ready for that? How can you ever really be ready for God showing up? It will always take us by surprise. But we still need the invitation of Advent because its lessons are important. Advent, actually, this beginning of the Christian year, we're asked to observe really a twofold anticipation. Now, the first one we pretty readily and easily remember, the first anticipation that we are anticipating and preparing to remember that incarnation of God in the birth of Jesus 2,000 years ago. That's the first anticipation, the one that we remember. But the second anticipation of Advent is more easily forgotten. It is anticipating a promised return of Christ, those ways that Christ continues to come but has yet to fully arrive in our midst, in our world, in our lives, but the promise that that is to come. It serves as this kind of reminder that as people of faith and people of faith who locate themselves in the Christian story in particular, that we're caught between remembering and waiting. We are caught between remembering what God has already done and waiting on the unknown, waiting on the yet to be revealed works of God, the unseen that is still coming. So if you are from a church background that observed Advent, you may recall that the 4 weeks of Advent and the four candles of Advent are often assigned specific themes. And the most well-known of them, although not the only known themes for them, are hope, peace, love, and joy. And this first Sunday of Advent The church traditionally focuses on the writings of ancient prophecy, those writings of prophetic hope, those hopes which Christians proclaim were fulfilled by the birth of Jesus. And today we hear from the prophet Jeremiah. And it's one of many times that the ancient Jewish prophets proclaimed the promise that God was going to raise up a new and a godly ruler from the royal lineage of Israel. And as Dick kindly framed our reading this morning, it bears noticing that these hopeful verses, these words, that when these prophets were proclaiming them, this hope-filled promise was almost always in the context of a nation that was under perilous threat and near ruin, a kingdom that was already believed to be lost beyond any reclaiming. Jeremiah, in fact, is called the weeping prophet because he wrote at the time of the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the spectacular temple built under Solomon, the beginning of the exile of the Jews to Babylon. Those are the reasons that Jeremiah weeps. It was one of the most shattering episodes in the history of ancient Israel. And still, here, Jeremiah speaks hope and promise to the devastation. He uses this metaphor of a new branch which will spring forth from the stump of a fallen tree, a branch, a new growth springing from a severed root. The promise that something that seems lost and dead and gone, the promise that God is going to raise up new life. That does not just sound like Jewish prophecy to me. That sounds like the good news of the gospel as well. The second scripture that we hear is from the gospel according to Luke. And it's one of those handful of passages where we have quotes of Jesus that predict a kind of return at the end of all things. Now, you might recall that Luke, the Gospel of Luke, was written about 40 years after the earthly life of Jesus. It was actually written 10 to 15 years after another destruction of the Jerusalem temple. When we read it today, it's good to recall that exactly as with Jeremiah, in the wake and the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple again, this time by another empire, Rome, in the wake of another desolation, another predicted coming of a promised figure, here called the Chosen One, God's appointed one who would set things aright. It seems each and every time we hear this promise to the faithful, it is when things have seemed at their worst, when they most needed it. In the midst of desolation and loss, when despair and resignation really do seem like the appropriate and logical response. It is when, quote, on earth there is distress among nations. People will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming upon the world. It is then when we're supposed to do what? It's then we're to stand up and raise our heads. We don't feel like doing that when we sense fear and foreboding, but we are asked to stand up and raise our heads. Why? Because redemption is drawing near. That seems like the biblical reminder that it appears darkest just before the dawn. Now, we may not be in Jerusalem under the crushing boot of an ancient empire, But I will say to me, the words of Luke and Jeremiah this week seem strangely alive. Aching for justice and righteousness, on earth distress among nations, people fainting from fear and foreboding about what is coming upon the world. That sounds like today's news. This week, this month, this year, distress, fear, foreboding. Another shooting in the U.S. in Colorado Springs. Protests continue seeking justice. Refugees teem across borders. So this Advent, I have to ask Jeremiah and Luke, how much harder is it supposed to get before it gets better? How much longer do we have to wait? You say it is near, but the promise seems very, very far away from us. How far? How near? So, frankly, every prediction of when and how such a moment might come has, in fact, proven woefully wrong for well over 2,000 years, hasn't it? No one has quite successfully predicted it. And you know, one of the great challenges of early Christianity was that Jesus turned out to be a Messiah quite unlike what everybody was expecting. That tells me that if we have come to expect that God's fulfillment will show up in a way that we can imagine at a time of our scheduling and preparation, we are quite likely to get it wrong. We cannot accurately judge how far or how near God's promise is about to be fulfilled. One of my favorite readings this season is an essay by Karl Rahner. He's a German Jesuit writer and theologian of the mid and late 20th century. And in his essay, really in a one-sided conversation that he poses to Jesus Christ, he kind of asks this question, are you Christ the eternal Advent or the eternal today or both? Perfectly capturing a paradox of faith. And here are a few of his words that really speak to this dilemma. Are you the eternal Advent? Are you the one who is always still to come but never arrives in a way as to fulfill our expectations? Are you the infinitely distant one who can never be reached? Are you the horizon surrounding the world of our deeds and suffering, the horizon which, no matter where we roam, is always just as far away? Are you the eternal today, within itself containing all time and all change, equally near to everything, and thus equally distant? It is the one single hour of Advent at the end of which we too shall have found out that you have really come. The one single hour of Advent at the end of which we too shall have found out that you have really come. The end of Advent is finding out that, in fact, Jesus has really come. The promise has in fact been fulfilled. So the prophetic words of Advent do not convince me that I or we can ever predict exactly how or when or how near or far we are from the promised fulfillment, certainly that we will ever necessarily recognize it when it comes upon us over and again. But I am convinced of this, that when things look like a mess in my life, in your life, nobody's life here looks a mess, or in the life of the world, when despair actually seems like the logical and reasonable choice, I am convinced that I will choose hope instead, because I believe God isn't done yet. Ours is a faith that not only remembers a Christmas Eve birth in a manger, it remembers an empty tomb on Easter morning. When things look to our eyes the very worst, we stand up and raise our heads. We look with the eyes of Advent, because whether it comes in the way or the time that we expect, redemption is drawing near. We need the waiting and the anticipation of Advent, not because we need just one more countdown until Christmas. We enter the invitation and the anticipation through prophecy and promise and hope, not to take upon ourselves a burden of false hope that we can somehow, by our own knowledge or effort or skill, make everything in our lives or in the life of the world work out all right in the end. But we enter it as a time to affirm a belief in a true hope that God is at work fulfilling a promise, the real anticipation that to witness the surprises that God will reveal, however near or far they may seem, they are well worth the wait.